British scientist Stephen Hawking has died at the age of 76. A spokesman for his family confirmed the news on Wednesday. He was one of the most respected and well-known scientists in modern history. Hawking tried to explain some of the most complicated questions of life to the masses, all while working under the shadow of a likely premature death. He was diagnosed with the wasting motor neuron disease at the age of 21 and was confined for most of his life in a wheelchair. As his condition grew worse, he had to resort to speaking through a voice synthesizer. His book, A Brief History of Time, published in 1988, made him a household name across the world.
It's 2.5 years since the Dieselgate emissions scandal first broke, and at Volkswagen, its legacy is still on show. The latest incarnation, a self-driving car called Cederic, a vision of VW's electric future. The emissions scandal has forced Volkswagen into a strategic shift, pledging to spend 34 billion euros on EVs over the next 5 years, while aiming to produce an electric version of every one of its 300 group models by 2030. Only 4 months ago, Donald Trump welcomed Broadcom's CEO into the White House, where he called the Singapore-based chipmaker one of the really great, great companies, after boss Hock Tan announced he had been moving its headquarters to the US. But now, the president believes Broadcom has other intentions, which threaten national security, signing a presidential order to block their proposed takeover of US chipmaker Qualcomm.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's March 14th, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. A good show for you today here on the broadcast. A little bit later on, Peter Frost will be here. He's the editorial and communications manager for Miller Coors. We're going to be talking about beer. That's a good topic for a morning chat, isn't it? That second segment this morning. In a minute, we're going to be talking about the future of robotic and autonomous cars and how they might impact our shopping habits. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning, up about 94 points. S&P futures are up about 8. NASDAQ futures are up about 30 points this morning. Around the globe, markets in Europe are generally higher, with the FTSE up about a quarter. The same situation happening in Germany and France this morning. And in Asia, lots of red on screen there. The Nikkei off almost a full percent, down 190 points. Same story with the Hang Seng, and the Shanghai are all lower this morning. Oil is trading at $60.96 a barrel, which is up about 25 cents this morning. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Walmart says it is going to start expanding same-day online grocery delivery service to more than 40% of U.S. households or 100 metro areas by year's end, as it tries to keep pace with Amazon.com. The service is currently available in just 6 markets. Walmart is building on its online grocery pickup program that uses personal shoppers to pick items and then take them to shoppers' cars parked at the curb. It says it'll continue to use ride-hailing services like Uber to deliver the goods to shoppers' homes as it expands the service. United Airlines in the news again. A dog died on a United Airlines flight after a flight attendant ordered its owner to put the animal in the plane's overhead bin. United said yesterday that it's taking full responsibility for the incident, which happened on a flight Monday from Houston to New York. In a statement, United called it a tragic accident that should have never happened. Pets, it said, should never be placed in the overhead bin. The dog was in a small pet carrier designed to fit under an airline seat. Passengers reported that they heard barking during the flight and didn't know that the dog had died until a plane had landed at LaGuardia Airport. Front and center this morning, autonomous vehicles and how they might affect our shopping habits in the future. Mohammed Rahman is Associate Professor of Management at Purdue University. He's with us this morning. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How about yourself?
Doing great. Thanks for being with us this morning. A good conversation I can't wait to have with you this morning about autonomous vehicles and our shopping habits. You've been doing research on this, and you have an idea about how one day when we're all using these autonomous vehicles, They could take us to get coffee or maybe even to get groceries, and that's going to be a boon for retail.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first of all, Steve. I think that future is pretty near for us. I mean, we're already seeing some of these movements. So if you look at GM, which has already opened something called GM Marketplace, it's allowing customers, the drivers, to already order things from participating retailers like Starbucks, some of the others. And you know, like, it will increasingly include more. It doesn't have the facilities like complete personal assistance facilities where, you know, it becomes the personal assistant that does the planning for your day. But, you know, that's totally possible. So if you think about it, the car knows a lot about us in terms of our destinations and where we start our origins. And if you combine that with all the information that we have on our smartphones or our daily planners, it's totally possible to plan your whole day, including picking up your grocery. Where are you going to pick up your grocery? That your car is going to place the order at Kroger or at Walmart or, you know, at, I guess, Dominic. That's what you guys have in Chicago. And on the way, it will pick it up. It will stop. Somebody will put it in the trunk and you'll just go home.
So theoretically, this could happen before it even comes to pick me up at work, right? Is that what we're thinking?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's very interesting to see that this might be the future. What are going to be the pitfalls here? Because I would imagine that we have to get through the first testing of the autonomous vehicles first before we can even think about some of this other stuff. So what is the realistic time frame for when we might see something like this happen?
This is a great question. I think, of course, you know, there's a lot of challenges still left in this space in terms of autonomous vehicles driving in residential streets. But I would argue we don't need a fully driving autonomous vehicle before the car becomes a platform for commerce. Because essentially, if you're driving, and even if it is assisted driving, so where you have to just be in front of the wheel, but you don't have to fully pay attention, all of a sudden, we need something else to do while we're in the car. That could be basically, I think that's where the OnStar marketplace is already coming into play, where it's placing orders for you. So I would think, you know, in the next 10 years, we should be able to see more and more cars being a platform where we interact with retailers. And then in terms of planning and all of that, it's totally doable in 10 years because essentially we have a lot of information already built in our phones, or that's the personal assistant that's going to be the next phase for Google Now or Siri, whatever platform you sort of subscribe to, or Alexa. And our fridges and our, you know, like appliances at home, they're being connected to the internet, and that's happening right now as we speak. So once all of these are on the Internet of Things, your fridge can basically figure out, okay, I need some milk, I need some cheese, I need this and that, and then that can be transferred to your app. So that could be your phone app, or it could be your car app. So once there, the car could basically figure out which retailer you should go to based on your route, right? So if you're getting out of your office, you're going home, you're driving the car. It doesn't have to be driving itself. But before that, your fridge already communicated with the car or with the app that, hey, I mean, we need this grocery. The car figured out you're going to go home from point A to B using this route today, given the traffic, given all of this, and then places the order. And then it just stops and picks it up.
So that noise at night that I'll be hearing in my kitchen will be the refrigerator talking to my car overnight.
Probably.
Professor, hang on with us. We're going to get into more of this in our second segment here. Hang on. We'll be back with Mohammed Rahman, associate professor of management at Purdue University. We're talking about autonomous vehicles and how they might be connected to our shopping very soon.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Walmart is ready to come right to your door. The company is expanding its online grocery delivery service. By the end of the year, Walmart says it will be in 100 metro areas, available to 40% of American homes. Today may be be the day Toys R Us stores start to say goodbye. Several reports say the retailer, struggling under $5 billion in debt, is set to file for Chapter 11 liquidation, eventually closing all its U.S. stores. President Trump may be looking to TV to fill the post of chief economic advisor. In his words, he's looking at Larry Kudlow very strongly. Kudlow, a CNBC commentator, was an early backer of the Trump campaign. United Airlines is apologizing after a family's dog died on a flight. The dog was in a carrier, and a fellow passenger says a flight attendant insisted the bag be put in the overhead bin. The Department of Transportation says United has the worst record among all U.S. carriers when it comes to animals being hurt or killed on their planes. Linda Lopez, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Mohammed Rahman, Associate Professor of Management at Purdue University, talking about the future of autonomous vehicles and the intersection with retail. Perhaps one of these autonomous vehicles will deliver your shopping to you when it comes to pick you up from work. Professor, I know you've been talking and writing about how it's important how the companies, the big companies who are going to be interacting with us in this space, react to all of this, whether they get in on it or decide to be a Sears or a Kmart. What is the biggest obstacle or the biggest challenge for them in getting involved?
Well, that's an excellent question. I think we were just hearing about Toys R Us and others. So I think one of the things here is, though, as if you think about this transition and all of the Internet of Things, there is a lot about data security. You need to know a lot of data. So as consumers, we want this convenience, but in exchange, there is a lot of data that is being transmitted to these companies, because you will know, so right now, technically, no one really knows what exactly you consume at home or what time you leave work and when you get home. That's not necessarily recorded to the precision level. But this would be all recorded. It has to be all communicated. So this is, it's important for these companies to be able to leverage data in a way where it's not going to look creepy to consumers. So if you are a company that is going to mishandle data, or you're asking for the data in a way where it's not sort of clear and it's creepy to consumers, it's unlikely that they're going to interact with you. Whereas, you know, if you are a company which is creating convenience and really handling the data well, because I think this is a big factor here, we are giving a lot about our private life. You have to trust these companies. So it's important that these large companies are good at handling that and generating analytics where, okay, we know how to serve you well. And, you know, increasingly what we're going to see is the companies that are able to come up with that convenience. So if you're focused on convenience, not just making money, of course money will follow, but if you're focused on creating the convenience, building the trust of the consumers, that's when things will happen. Because, if you look at Walmart, which is unrolling right now, grocery pickup by its associates, well, if the picked-up groceries are not meeting your standards, then it's a problem. You're not going to really use that service, then the whole thing falls apart. So there are those type of things that are important. The other part that is going to be important, I believe, is the competition part. Essentially, many of these personal assistant services, whether it's Google, whether it's Alexa, whether your car, I suspect, you know, we'll all come to some platform at some point where these are going to be the glass ceilings. These are the ones we're interacting with. So we'll just say, hey, Google, now, can you order some grocery for me? Or can you buy a pair of jeans for me? Well, but then it needs to sort through my preferences and connect to the retailers who will serve me well. Now, when it comes to that, there would be competition. There would be retailers that do well in terms of matching my preferences. They're the ones that will just come up and up. The ones that don't do well, they will just get lost and lost and lost. This is the sort of the unfortunate sort of cycle in this, that if you are not good at it, you're risking to be lost in that whole history.
Yeah, and the other part of this, too, from a person who still likes to go to the grocery store, I would imagine that we would see some disruption in some of the retail processes that we now see. So instead of having maybe a parking lot at a grocery store, there would be that that line of autonomous vehicles sort of pulling in like a drive-through almost.
Oh, I believe so. I totally agree with you. I think that is going to happen. So, you know, like we have seen drive-through prescription pickups showing up in different grocery stores. I think that could be basically the way to... Right now, they have basically designated parking spots for cars that are just coming to pick up grocery, but I think it's going to move toward what you're suggesting.
We're running out of time here, but I want to ask you one more question. We have about a minute or so left. That is, you know, when we talk about autonomous driving, there are a lot of testing going on right now with multiple drivers, multiple people in one car. So it would be sort of like a pool service. Would this retail idea work in that regard? Would it be able to pick up multiple people's things at different places? If, for instance, you have seven people in a car?
So basically, no, I think that's where this car marketplace could even become more attractive. So it will probably place all seven people's items in one place or potentially two, three different places if it's taking all these people through that route, right? So when you're picking these things up. And at that point, this becomes like the place where, you know, if I give you the order to Walmart, the platform might get 20%. If it gives the order to Kroger, it might get 25%. So it might just give it to Kroger. But again, it has to be convenient for the consumer. So you can't just think about the profit you're making. It has to be very clear that consumers are happy with it, because if you don't do it right, it's not going to work.
Very exciting indeed. The future is very exciting, and can't wait to see all of this take shape. Professor, thank you for being on with us this morning. We appreciated the conversation.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Mohammed Rahman, Associate Professor of Management at Purdue University.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Another Chicago startup is getting acquired by Salesforce. CloudCraze, an enterprise commerce platform founded in 2009, announced it's being bought by the CRM giant for an undisclosed amount. And be sure to follow along with Chicago Inno's Tech Madness, our March Madness-style bracket competition for Chicago startups. We just unveiled the 32 tech companies that made it to the second round of the tournament. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Remember the days when you could name all by heart all of the brands of beer in the retail marketplace? Well, things have changed a lot with the craft brewing industry taking charge in many of the spaces. So many brands, you don't even know all their names. That's part of the fun, right? One company has lasted through the years, Miller Coors, and Peter Frost is editorial and communications manager there and is with us this morning to have a little conversation about beer. Peter, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
We want to touch base with you. Our listeners may remember you from Crane's Chicago business, but you're now working in the beer industry.
That's right. I'm at Miller Coors now.
How's it going?
It's great. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
And you're getting ready to say you run the...
I run the Miller Coors blog.com. It's called the Behind the Beer News. So I'm still writing. I'm just writing for Miller Coors. So I cover the beer industry. I talk about spirits a little bit, and I talk about our new products and what we're doing in the market.
You, in order to become an expert blogger at this, I bet you had to do a little bit of history. I know a lot of us are, when we're sitting at the pub, we probably think of ourselves as beer historians, but I bet you had to really do your homework.
It was a lot of really difficult research, let me tell you. No. Yeah, I did my research over a beer, over a Miller Lite. So now, yeah, it's a really fascinating industry with a long history in the United States, and there's a lot to know, with a lot I still don't know.
What is the business like? Is it competitive? Who are the players? I know we're all kind of drinking craft beer sometimes, and there's lots of different little brands, but who are the players?
Well, the major players are Anheuser-Busch InBev, and they, of course, make Bud, Bud Light, brands like that. And we are Miller Coors. We're the second largest brewer in the United States. We have a portfolio of brands that includes Miller Lite, Coors Light, Line & Kugel's Blue Moon. We also own four craft breweries around the country. And those are the two major players. Heineken also is a big player in the United States. They own Lagunitas and some other breweries. And then Constellation Brands, which is based here in Chicago, they import beer from Mexico, such as Corona and Modelo. Those are the major players.
So really four big brands that control a lot of the beer people drink.
Correct.
How is it different, like, let's say, 10 or 15 or 20 years ago?
Well, I mean, 20 years ago, you know, it was very much the same. But now craft has, you know, craft has really risen over the past decade or so, and it's carved out about a 12 or 13% share of the volume in beer. And so that's brand new. Craft has really disrupted the whole industry. You know, 20 years ago, four beers were like more than half of the market. Miller Lite, Coors Light, Budweiser, and Bud Light. Now today, you know, the share of all those beers has gone down because in part of all of the disruption and fragmentation that has to do with craft and the rise of imports. Mexican imports have been on fire.
I like one of your recent blog entries. You were talking about how folks go to the beer aisle and it's just paralyzation.
Yeah.
Because there's, and it's true, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what do I try this weekend? Or how does a company like yours fight that or deal with that?
Well, it is. Yeah, it's the paradox of choice, right? Like, you walk into a Binny's now and it's confusing. If you want an IPA, which one are you going to drink? Like, I don't know. It's confusing. You have to look at can dates. What's fresh? How does a company like Miller Coors do that? Well, we try to partner with our retailers and also with our wholesalers to make sure that that the beer aisles are stocked correctly, right? And that there aren't out of stock. So, I mean, the inclination of, you know, of a retailer might be, well, I'm going to carry all this craft, and that's great. We think you should carry craft, but you shouldn't carry just craft at the expense of, you know, the beer that still does the most volume, which is premium lights, economy beers, and, you know, things like Miller Lite and Coors Light. I mean, that's still, most drinkers in the United States are still looking for that type of a beer. And, you know, sometimes they can get lost on the shelf because, you know, the retailer might be so focused on craft, they just, you know, they forget about their bread and butter.
And speaking of that, I mean, I know that people may know this, when you go down the cereal aisle, cereal is arranged in a way where you see certain brands at certain places. Is it the same with the beer aisle? I mean, does Miller Coors say, okay, no, you've got to have our stuff at this place or that location?
Yeah, I mean, we can't tell anyone what to do, right? But, you know, we have a lot of people working on, you know, planograms, they're called, or category management. So, yeah, I mean, there is a flow that the company recommends to retailers that says this is how you should set up your beer aisle. And, you know, other beer companies do the same thing. So we're all sort of vying for the right space.
I know a lot of people have been critical of competition for not being in the United States. I'm thinking of InBev, right? They're
right,
an out-of-country brewer now. I mean, everybody thinks of Budweiser as a St. Louis product.
Right.
But that's the issue, too. Do people buy based on region and whether or not it's an American or foreign beer?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I know that there are some diehards who, you know, who are very upset when a beer company is purchased, or they say, it's based in Belgium or whatever. But I think most people just, you know, they're loyal to the brand. And, you know, even though Bud is based in, the company's based in Belgium, I mean, they still brew here. They still employ a lot of people here. Miller Coors is based in the United States. So we're the largest, you know, U.S.-based brewer. But I think people are brand loyal to a certain extent. And I also think that a lot of today's drinkers, particularly craft drinkers, are looking for local and regional. You know, they like their hometown brands. But they also, you know, might have a Miller or Coors every now and again.
So the field is fragmented. There are all kinds of these brands, as we've talked about. What's the money like? I mean, who has the lion's share? How is it all divided in terms of financials?
Can you repeat that, Stephen?
So, like, in terms of money, I mean, how much are we spending on beer these days?
Oh.
How much revenue are companies taking in, and how is it split up that way?
Okay, sure. So, you know, it's much the same as the share game. Kraft has about 20% of the sales dollars now in beer, and the other 80% is made up of, you know, of Miller Coors, AB InBev, Heineken, and Constellation brands. So Bud is the number one, the largest by far. We are second. I think we have, gosh, I don't know, maybe 27, 28, 30% of the market. Constellation's growing. Heineken has a smaller part of it. You know, the big thing that's happening right now in beer is beer is losing a lot of drinkers to spirits. So wine and spirits have been dropping prices like mad over the last decade, and they've picked up a ton of share from beer. And what beer, the beer industry right now is, what they're trying to do is trying to get that share back. So we're trying to keep people from leaving premium lights and going over to vodka and soda. So that's the big challenge right now in beer, is just sort of holding on to who we have and trying to recruit some of these younger legal age drinkers back.
And it seems like that the reckoning is coming for that industry as well. We had recently a CEO spotlight on this program about just that topic, that the craft distillers are making a big push in that market. So maybe they're going to start feeling some of that pain.
It's possible. But, you know, craft, the craft part of the spirits world is still tiny compared to what craft is like in beer. So maybe, you know, 5 years from now, maybe there'll be a bigger, they'll have a bigger role. But I think right now it's still sort of early.
So put us into the minds of beer drinkers, at least from the way you see it at Miller Coors. You mentioned brand loyalty is important, but is it also occasion? I mean, is it the event that we're at? Is it, like, for instance, if we go to the beach, we drink one sort of type of beer. If we're having a football party, we do another.
Yeah, it's very, so that's the first thing that our folks would say, is that beer is occasion-based, like you said. So, yeah, we choose first on occasion. If I'm going to the store, I'm thinking about what I'm doing. If I'm hanging out at home that night with a friend, I'm going to choose one beer. Or if I'm going to a tailgate, I'm going to choose a different beer. If I'm, you know, going to a bar or a restaurant, I will, you know, I will choose a different type of beer. So, yeah, it's occasion-based.
The premium beer, I'm guessing, is poured from a bottle or a can?
Oh, this is a point of contention. We talked about this earlier. I happen to enjoy canned beer, and you know, a lot of beer drinkers, a lot of craft is moving into cans right now. Majority of our beer is sold in cans, but there are people who are like yourself, Steve, who like bottles.
Right. And it seems like I see more bottles at bars. You know, they pull more bottles out and open them up and pull them in the...
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And speaking of this, how is this controversy over tariffs affecting the industry with cans versus bottles and aluminum versus glass?
Right. Well, it's a big deal for the beer industry. So we sell an increasing amount of our beer in cans. We've got, you know, millions and millions of aluminum cans that we use every year, or that we make and that we put our beer into and sell. So this tariff's a big deal. And, I mean, the company has come out and said that it's likely to lead to job losses across the industry. I mean, it's going to cause the price of aluminum to rise, right? And if the price of aluminum rises, that's the, you know, it all goes into the price of beer. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad deal for us, really. And the United States just does not have enough sheet aluminum available, right? So we have to look outside the country to import aluminum. And, you know, any tariff, anything that's going to increase the price on it, is, it's a bad deal for beer.
Yeah, I think it's one that beer drinkers are going to be paying a lot of attention to. I think the Congress is going to get involved in this moving forward. Another blog entry that you've written is about where the biggest growth in beer sales is happening. Dollar stores.
Right.
I would have never guessed that.
I wouldn't have either. This is such a surprising trend here. It's retailer in particular in the dollar stores has just been on fire. It's Dollar General. They have something like 14,000 stores, 35% more than 10 years ago or 5 years ago, maybe. They just keep building. They're building 900 more stores this year. They're huge for beer. And, sales in that channel for beer are up almost 40%. For Miller Coors, it's like almost 100%. It's crazy how much beer is sold out of those stores. And if you look at the Dollar General business model, they just open up in all of these, I mean, they open everywhere, but their focus is on rural towns. Now, I'm from a small town in Minnesota, and 10 years ago, they lost a grocery store. A Dollar General will come in, and I mean, that's really the only place left if you don't want to drive 15 miles or 20 miles into a bigger town to go to a Walmart or a Target. You've got nothing left in your hometown. So if a Dollar General opens, all of a sudden you got a place to get toothpaste, you got a place to get milk.
Yeah.
And good for us, we have a place to get beer.
Is the beer a dollar at the Dollar General store?
It is not a dollar. It is not. As much as I wish it was, it's not. But yeah, it's still, you know, our economy brands do really well there. Keystone Light is a huge brand for dollar stores because it's priced at an economy price.
And it speaks, though, to the strategy of getting, finding the consumers where they're at, giving the deal that they want.
Exactly.
Talk to us about what the future holds. I know you're still kind of new at Miller Coors, but have you seen the strategy? What's it going to be going forward? I know you write about a lot of this stuff. You probably can't share a lot with us, but what's the strategy?
I don't have insight on the chessboard, but I do know that you know, beer is in a bit of a tough spot. You know, the industry has been soft for a little while. Part of it, as we discussed earlier, has to do with spirits, and spirits and wine have sort of lowered prices while beer has risen prices or increased prices. So that's something we're seeking to reverse. Craft has fragmented the market incredibly, and you've seen companies like Miller Coors and like Anheuser-Busch and Heineken and Constellation Brands swoop in and buy craft brands to get a foot in that market. I think over the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to see a shakeout in the craft market. I personally do not think there's room for all of them to succeed, particularly those who have become regional brewers, who have you know, really ramped up and spent a lot of money on production. I don't think there's room for all of them. So I think you're going to see the craft market shake out. You're starting to see it a little bit right now. I think you'll see some continued consolidation. You know, that means craft combining with craft, or larger brewers like Miller Coors and Anheuser-Busch continue to snap up brands if they're at the right price. And I think, you know, you're going to continue to see beer try to innovate and even move into new areas. I mean, you saw Constellation Brands, which I said, you know, owns Corona. They just invested a 9% or 10% stake in a cannabis company.
Yeah,
in Canada. I mean, that's what they see the future as. I know Miller Coors has a team studying cannabis and the industry. You know, we're doing hard sparkling waters now, like hard seltzers. I mean, that's an innovation. We have spiked iced tea lemonade. So I think you're going to continue to see a lot of innovation, and a lot of that innovation is going to be focused on keeping people in beer or bringing them to beer from wine and spirits.
The cannabis one's an interesting one. I bet you your company's watching very closely what's going on in Colorado.
Right? Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Are people choosing a beer or a joint?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I don't have a lot of information on, but you know, there is a little bit of interaction there for sure. Yeah. I mean, because I do think, you know, people might have a joint and a beer as well, but I don't know.
The pairing is a good one, right?
I don't know. It's super interesting, and it's certainly something the company's taking a look at.
And I know that this isn't your expertise either. You're part of the company, but from an advertising standpoint, I mean, the two ads that come to my mind for Miller Coors are the one with the male singers singing the old jingle.
Oh yeah,
you know,
we've
I heard
got
that
the time. We've got
the beer. That
Miller
brings
beer.
Back a lot of memories when I hear that
yeah.
commercial, and makes me want to have a Miller.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's doing its job
right.
then.
And then the other is the Coors, where you have Golden, Colorado?
Yeah, Golden, Colorado.
Where you have the flags out on the, it looks a very Americana advertisement. That too makes me want to drink a Coors.
Well, that's great. That's what we want to hear.
That's done purposeful, I bet.
Well, that's right. Well, yeah, I think what you see with Miller Coors advertising in particular, at least in the last couple of years, is they're really focusing on the beer itself and the ingredients and the history of our brands. I know other breweries are, you know, they sort of play on humor a lot, like Dilly Dilly. Mm-hmm. But Dilly Dilly is not selling any more beer. I mean, if you look at the numbers, there's Bud Light's not selling anymore because of Dilly Dilly, even though everyone's heard Dilly Dilly. Miller Coors has really just been focusing on quality
right.
and history and heritage and the ingredients.
And then the million-dollar question that I'll close with is, what's it like working at a beer company? Do you get to drink beer all day, or what? Do they have beer in the water cooler there, or what?
They do not. However, there is a pub on the 16th floor that's open each day from 4:30 to 7. It's private, sorry, but I can invite you. Maybe we can have a beer.
Maybe someday.
And you guys have to come over and have an ice-cold Miller Lite straight from the cleanest lines. It's delicious.
And we can read the Miller blog that you write online.
That's right, MillerCoorsBlog.com.
Peter, it's good seeing you again, and best of luck to you over at the beer company.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Peter Frost with us this morning. He's the editorial and communications manager at Miller Coors. You can, again, read his blog at MillerCoorsBlog.com, and make sure you follow him on Twitter, too, at Peter Frost.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up about 89 points now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Trend looks to be for a strong opening on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Yesterday, higher cash prices put an end to the losing streak of the lean hog futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And as a result, June lean hogs gained 60 cents a hundredweight to end the day at 77.47. Cattle futures mixed. The June live cattle contract down 7 cents at $113.15 a hundredweight. And the April feeder cattle contract down 20 cents for the day. It ended at the $142.30 level. Turning to the grain market yesterday, the corn hit a seven-month high, thanks to some pretty good exports of corn. And we saw the market helped by the export demand and the drought conditions in number three global shipper Argentina. Soybeans also moved higher as rains forecast this week in Argentina were likely to provide only limited relief for soy and corn plants. And of course, yesterday, some of the experts in Argentina said the soybean crop is dead. There will be no kind of a recovery. Wheat prices turned lower at midday, and so we saw the nearby March wheat contract up 3.25 cents for the day, March corn up 3.5, and March soybeans gained 6 cents for the day. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, March the 14th. A couple of reports out today, including the latest retail sales figures for February. The Labor Department also releases the Producer Price Index for February. Earnings today include Signet Jewelers. Also tomorrow, Dollar General. Broadcom out with quarterly earnings, and then Friday, Tiffany earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, March the 14th. It is Pi Day, and we want to thank Cupital up in Evanston for the delicious, savory, handmade pies that they brought in today in honor of Pi Day. Of course, pi means something else, but we certainly will celebrate the day with handmade savory pies today. And please make sure you stop by and see the good folks at Cupital. We appreciate them taking care of us this morning for breakfast. You can reach them at Cupital.com. And boy, these pies are delicious. Happy Pi Day, everybody. Back tomorrow morning. I'm Steve Krasanich. Have a great day.